Okay, we're continuing in the Sefer Bilvavi. We're on page Yud Ches. We're in the middle of the page. We're discussing the idea of building and inspiring. And we said that one has to be careful not to confuse the two. The purpose of inspiration is to take the inspiration and to continue with your building. You're trying to build yourself up into being the person that you were supposed to be in your Avodas Hashem, and you're on certain levels, and you're trying to move up those levels to build this structure. So there can be times where you kind of get stuck in your building process, and that moment of Hisarus, that moment of inspiration, is meant not to be self-serving in and of itself as an independent reality, but that moment of inspiration is meant to take us, to move us, and to arouse us in our building process to continue the building that's necessary to help with our growth. And we elaborated on that a lot at the end of yesterday's class. So speaking of Hisorurus, so there's a story with the Briska Rav. And the Briska Rav had a number of close students, so he asked one of them, he said, what has more hashpa on you? What has more influence on your life? If you hear about, and you go to a funeral, let's say, of a family that's killed in a car accident, or you're present at a funeral where an old man that's 95 years old dies in his sleep. What gives you more hashpa? What arouses you? What wakes you up more? So the person said to the Briska Rav, obviously when a family gets killed in a tragic accident like that, that is something that arouses us more. So the Briska Rav says, I don't think so. For me, it arouses the other example. Why? He says, certainly when a young person dies, we cry and we feel terrible and it's a shock and everything else that goes with that. But there's also something else going on at the same time, is that we don't ever really think that this is going to happen to me. So, you know, most people don't get into car accidents and die in a car accident. Most people don't die young. Most people live longer. So the fact that I can tell myself, and as a defense mechanism within the person, to say it's not going to happen to me, so that does not obligate me to make any changes. And we don't take it so much to heart in order to make changes. We'll go to the Shiva and we'll cry our hearts out. And that's true, we'll cry our hearts out, but we won't change. But an old man dying in his sleep, we all know that that is exactly how it's going to end with us. That's what we want. We want it to end like that. And everyone has to relate to that. You cannot say that that's not going to happen to me. So Briska Rav says, if I think about that, I ask myself, Satak, there's going to be the day that I'm going to have to go. And I know that I'll go as an old man. That's fine, but it's still going to happen to me. So I got to ask myself now, where am I holding? What's going to be my binyan when I leave this world? What's Hashem going to ask for me? You know, okay. So at that point, you know, you have to feel a certain urgency in your avodas Hashem to get moving with that binyan. And there is a certain, I hate to use the word, and it's, don't take it the wrong way, but there is a certain glamour of getting involved in Tzaras. There's a certain Hollywoodness to it. It's an event, right? There is a certain unfortunate have to be at that Levaya, you know, because it's an event, it's a happening, and it's an unusual. It doesn't happen every day. I have to go, and yes, indeed, it will break your heart when you go, but it doesn't fix your heart. And the trick in life is to fix your heart, not to break your heart. If you go to a funeral of a 95-year-old man, that's supposed to fix your heart. It's not as glamorous. The tears aren't flowing when there's a 95-year-old man who dies. Well, Shomer Torah Mitzvahs was a nice guy. So we say we celebrate his life and all those nice words because we don't have anything better to say. But that's supposed to fix your heart. Because Mir Sashem will all be 95-year-old men. And how are we gonna, or women, right? And how are we gonna, what's gonna be our binyan? As much as we'll say, you know, I'm not denying there should be hisarus when a tragedy happens. But the Brisker Rav says it's not the same. And certainly what the Brisker Rav understood is, you know, yes, if you take a tzara and you put it into your binyan and that gets you motivated to get going out to your work, any hisarus will work. But in terms of real effectiveness, you know, people will sit and say, I'm shocked and I'm this and I'm that. And you're going to cry and you're going to do a million things. But are you going to get back to work and build your structure or not? Is that event going to motivate you more than something else to build up your structure? Then you start going through denial, then you start going, there's all kinds of feelings that go through and they're human feelings. We're not denying those human feelings. But as we said yesterday, you know, people get wrapped up in the hisorus and not in what it's supposed to produce. It's supposed to produce that we indeed leave the funeral and say, okay, where is my avodas Hashem? Where am I, what level am I stuck on? And how am I going to get back moving in that area? Then you will have used going to the funeral for a good purpose. But just, you know, to tell people I was there and people tell you, how many people were there? Were they crying? Were they this? Were they that? And so, yeah, the Jew was such a nebuch on the kids and this and that. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have that emotion. That's an important thing to have. But for most people, that is the be-all and end-all of the funeral. And then you go home and you say, Baruch Hashem, it's not me. And let's get on and talk now Lashon Hara. And let's get on and take our kids to select hockey. Let's go on with our whole lifestyle that is totally not in line with what Hashem really, really wants from us. And that is the biggest tragedy. Tragedy isn't so much the person who dies, because Hashem knows what he's doing. There's no tragedy in terms of the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality, Hashem knows exactly what he's doing. What he's hoped, and there's no one has a free will choice, so that's something to talk about. No one faults a person for dying at 50 if God takes them away. You're going to say, it's your fault? It's not your fault. The tragedy is all people walk away from the funeral who should be inspired to make a difference now, and they don't. That's the real, real tragedy. And that's where the real tears should be flowing. For the living people who just coldly walk away from it. I mean coldly in terms of their own personal development. And they don't take that moment that God gives you a precious gift. It's a gift to be inspired and to really reevaluate your life as you should do. And if you can do that, then you do it. Then it's a big tikkun. Then there's great benefit to it. But if not, it's a big problem. Yeah, Rafal.
Well, I don't think I've been at a funeral where I haven't thought while someone's making a hesped, what will they say about me? I find that very...
Yeah, everybody thinks that to an extent, but then you leave and you don't think about it anymore. Now, do you think about it 3 days later? You know, what? Not you. I'm not talking about you now. I'm saying, you know, when the person's sleeping in for davening 3 days later, is he thinking of that hesped? Take that hesped with you. You know, that's take the hesped with you, and really, that's what the PSS Rebbe told you to do. Like, really focus on that moment. At that moment, when you really say, what are they going to say about me at the funeral? Right? But what happens usually is we want to get away after the shiva's over. I want to get away from it. I don't want to think about it. It gets me depressed. And you have to be able to hold on to that feeling. And as they say, take a photograph of that moment and that feeling and bring it back up at important moments. That usually doesn't happen. I'm not saying it's not with you. I say with maybe, what are they going to say about me? Okay, and therefore what? Here's the thing. Therefore what? I'm going to be the best mother. Let's going to talk to them about what kind of mother Faye was. Yeah, okay. Yeah, think the rabbi's going to say that about me? Right? I don't know if Rabbi's going to. Oh, so you leave. I'm going to be the best mother in the world. Okay, kids, let's go bowling. You know, I'm going to be the best. That's the problem. We start making these big kabbalas. Well, we're not asking for kabbalas. Let's go back. Are you building anything? Where are you in your building? So if you're not anywhere in your building, you see, which many people are not, then all these acceptances of doing things, they're in the ether. They don't have any basis from which they're going to develop from. And we don't we don't doubt the people's sincerity when they make the kabbalah. At that time, they genuinely mean it. No less than they mean it on ni'ilah, that they're going to be better. But there's no structure that it's being predicated on. And when there's no structure, it just vanishes. That's the problem. What are they going to say at my Leviah? Yeah, they're going to say I was the best mother in the world. They're going to say I was the best this in the world, best that in the world, the most honest one. Is that what they're going to say? So, okay, so that could be a motivator. Something wrong with that. Something wrong with that. Okay, so now, but to do that, I know I have to have a structure. I have to have this. And if you say, you know, I don't have any structure. I have no means to make this happen. Oh, I'm really in trouble. Okay, so what do I do? Okay, let's go back to the beginning of our Avodas Hashem. Let's start working on Emunah Hashem. Let's start working in those things. Start building up that structure. Or if you're stuck on something, to move ahead in that. That's where it's really at. And that precise feeling, Rafal, for most people, I genuinely agree with you. They feel that way. But they have no basis from which to make it catch and for it to develop. And everyone feels that way. And every funeral you go to, I hope they're going to say that about me. And that's about it. That's where it starts, and most often it ends. Now, there's a few people who take these sorrows properly. And they really say, you know, there has to be changes. But again, a change does not work when there's not a structure to support it. That's the whole point of the Sefer. And if you don't have a structure, then all those arousals will be of nothing to support. And that's what you need to have, that kind of support. Yeah. Yes.
So wouldn't you think that if you took the untimely tragedy, that would inspire you that you would say, I'd better start getting my act together or building my structure now because I might not be the one who gets to go to that.
Yeah, certainly that should be what people should do. And that you're right, that should be happening. So what the Brisker Rav is saying is, but it usually doesn't. It usually doesn't. Because number one, people don't think it's going to happen to them. That's one. People have to. Here's the. Yeah, I know, but people have to continue living the next day. You know, and if you're going to start thinking you're going to die the next day, it can paralyze you, and people get depressed and they can't. So they dismiss it and say it's not going to happen to me. That's what most people they say. Baruch Hashem, it wasn't me. Really, that if it's not conscious, it's subconscious. Baruch Hashem, it wasn't me. Because if you really, you know, or else you can't go on. You know, so that's what usually happens, and there should be that fine line that says it's not going to be me, but now I'm 50 years old. Where am I holding? I'm not holding far enough. I better get moving and get back into the structure. The point we're trying to make: most people haven't learned this safer. Most people don't realize they have to have a structure. Most people don't know where to turn to move on from this. And so you're right, Sho. They're going to say, I got to be better. Okay, so how are you going to be better? What are you going to do? I don't know. I don't even know what better means. Truthfully, I think I'm pretty good. You know? And I think I'm as good as her. So I'm fine. I'll just make sure the rabbi knows more of the things I'm doing so he'll be able to say it. It's funny, this one person we have a few people who are members, but you only see them for high holidays. Your mamash, you don't see them at all. And it's funny, the guy became a member, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago. I'm telling you, nobody really knows he's a member besides Jeanette would know. And she doesn't know who I'm talking about. But no one would know besides me and her. Like, who knows who the members are? He's, so yeah. This guy said, you know, he wanted to meet with me. I said, fine, good. So at the meeting, he says, yeah, you know, I want you to get to know who I am because I know you're the guy who's going to say the eulogy for me. So, you know, he said it straight out. He was honest. He said, I know you're going to be saying the eulogy for me, and I want you to know who I am and what I'm all about. So when it's time, you'll have had some kind of personal relationship with me. Okay, you know, it's always glad to speak to people, you know. Okay, then, you know, that's what I tried to get into, you know, coming to shul, and he had all kinds of excuses why not, but I'm a good person and all these other things, and, you know, and that, as far as he's concerned, as long as I say he's a good person, then, you know, then he's,
if it doesn't.
He's a happy guy. He's a happy guy. So that's the whole inyan of this Hisorus when we're going through these events. And I may have to talk about this on Shabbos, so you may get a repeat. So you have to forgive me, because I don't know what else to tell the community now, this Shabbos. Anyway, if Hashem is making me learn this, and you know, few people can hear a review, but I think this is an important idea. Anyway, let's go back inside now. We are smack in the middle of the page, in the large paragraph of Kasher Adam Shomea. We're on the third line. We're saying that you have to take these words, right, as not a goal, but as a crowbar to further the building process. So he's saying, Lo lakachas es ha-hisoirus v'lavod al kol nekudabo, not to take that hisoirus and to work every point of that hisoirus and to talk about and to hash over the details of that moment of hisoirus and to flesh it all out and to beat it to death and to extract every moment out of it. But a person is supposed to get out of his slumber. And after he gets out of that slumber, he has to take the arousal that he's supposed to take. And now to work in a state of being awake. Now to start working, get back to working on that point that he's holding at in his building process and to firm it up and to make it more solid and now to move on. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Okay, I think we've made this point abundantly clear. Now, he moves on to the next point. Coming back to your point, Shelley, of a couple of weeks ago, I don't want to belabor it, but I'm just trying to, it's relevant. You know, so what's wrong with, you know, going to those interesting types of classes once in a while? So again, I'm not saying anything's wrong with it, but those maybe are inspiring. They might be inspiring. Say, you know, wow, that's really fascinating that Torah has such interesting perspectives on things. I mean, I don't know why else a person would go, right? To know, well, I'm curious to know what the Torah says about DNA and this and that. Okay, and you walk away and say, that was good, right? So here's the point. So now, what are we supposed to do with that? Right? We always have to ask, what do we do with the time we're spending? So I look at that kind of an event. In other words, in terms of our building a structure, that has absolutely nothing to do with building your structure. It's not. It's not building your structure. You have to look at it as a hisarus, as an arousal, and say, wow, that's how unbelievable Torah is. That's how unbelievable Yiddishkeit is. You know, I'm really glad to know that this path that I've chosen is one that makes so much sense. And you should use those events as an inspiration. So when you walk out of it, to say, okay, I'm stuck on this level here of believing that God really created me, whatever. And, you know, I haven't really been moving on this. Or, you know, and we don't have to limit it to this, these five topics. You know, let's take a different area. Davening. Okay. Do all of us feel we have reached the top level of davening that's possible in our lives? I don't think so. Right? So what do we do now? So you're at a level. There's levels. First, where we're at no levels, you don't daven. Okay, now there's a level, you go to shul on Shabbos. Right? There's a lot of levels here. At first, you go to Shulchan Shabbos, you only come in for a few minutes, you go to the alternative class, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, after a while, you come to Shul and you're davening in Shul. Then again, you're reading the words, we don't understand a lot what you're saying, you know. Okay, you go to prayer class, go to the alternative class, and okay, that's good. So you learn a little bit more about davening, you understand a little bit better. So, and you got the Shabbos routine pretty good. You're only davening once a week. Okay, then you add in Friday night, add in Mincha, they make the big step for Sunday, and over time, you're now davening three times a day. So that's pretty good. You're not on level one, you're on level whatever, I don't know, out of 100, you're on level 50, so I don't know. Okay, are we done? We're not done. We're not done. Like the Tzaddik said in the last book, are we in the world of prayer? Are we in the Olam of prayer? Like, okay, so now you do it because you know it's right, you know it's the thing you should do, you're a good person, you want to do what's right, you understand that davening is important, you even understand a little bit of the themes that are there. But are you excited about davening? Are you anxious to daven? Do you wish you could have an extra 10 minutes of davening? No, you're not there yet. Okay, so that's the area that you're stuck in. You see, you're stuck in that area. Now, it doesn't mean to say you get out of that area in 3 weeks. It could take a year and a half. That's what the Tzaddik says. So now, that's an area that you now... I think many of us would sit and think about. That's the problem. He's going to talk about that in the next chapter about Cheshbon HaNefesh. Know where you're holding. That's so important. If you don't know where you're holding, then you don't know what level you're at. You don't even know if you're not even building anything. You don't realize you're building anything. So now you're saying, okay, so now I'm at this place of davening, but I'm not that, it's not my favorite time of the day. It's not. Okay, so now you got to find what's the next step. Not all the way to being the tzaddik who's up in the shemayim, is what's the next step necessary to put you to work on next? And then you walk out of that class on, you know, DNA and this and that. It's, wow, that's amazing. I didn't, you know, Hashem really smart. You know, it's like unbelievable. I'm really happy to be connected to such a God. Okay, you know what? And that inspiration, I gotta get better in my tefillah now. Because that's the Hashem I'm trying to connect to. I've been stuck on level 51. Okay, now, and I really haven't thought hard how to move on with it. I'm going to think hard. And then you'll come up with a plan to go on to that next step. Then it was worthwhile to go to that event. But the people who just go from those events to those events, and that's inspiring, and this is inspiring. It's all inspiring. But you ain't going anywhere. Oh, so I'm saying, at a first level, Kirov, there's a point to it. You need a lot of inspiration until a person finally moves. But for somebody who's more on the page, so you use it. But remember, using it as an inspirational evening, and you have to walk out of every inspirational evening. You're going to hear Chveis, Jonathan Rieti is going to be speaking for Tom Cheshavs, whoever he's talking to. I don't know who he's talking for. So he spoke. Whatever. So, wow, he's a great speaker. He's inspiring and this and that. Good. Okay. What are you doing about it now? That you have to always walk out of. Now... And you're not going to be equipped if you don't know what level you're on before you go into that thing. So that's why we're going to see that the next chapter is going to work on telling us, okay, you got to know where you're at. If you don't know where you're at, you don't know where the inspiration to take you. Okay? Yeah?
So it strikes me that this is probably a big pitfall in a Baal Tshuva, much more so maybe than an FFB situation. Situation, probably the first year or so is there's nothing to be done about that. It's a good thing, but everything is new and everything is exciting and everything is unraveled. And this could be a pitfall that the next year, when it's not so inspiring anymore and it's just real, that could cause a real downslide. If that's all it was.
There's no question about it. For Baal Tshuva, he's more apt to fall to these things. No question about it. That's why we gave the drush we did about a month ago in Shul. That's why we gave the drush for that point. Okay, let's move on. Yeah, next subsection. Shmias divrei hisoris rak alidei mi sho'elom aborur. So we can go a little quicker now because I basically kind of spoke out a chunk of this on one level. So listening to words of arousal, it's only to the degree to someone who is clear to know where he is in his world. Depending on the clarity of your world, that's going to determine how much you hear that he serves. As we have explained, ha'irvav shel musagei habinyan in musagei service, we described the confusion between the concept of building and the concept of arousal. So it comes out, yesh bahem ezehu shatnez shalu lahazik. It could be we're going to produce a forbidden mixture of shatnez over here, a shatnez of binyan and hisairus, which is not a healthy type of situation to have here, if you're mixing them up in a way that's forbidden. Mahim kena trufa ledover. So now what is the solution for this? This is the problem. So what's the solution to this problem that we keep making shatnez in our avodas Hashem? So he now explains the following. Yeshnan shtei ramos shali service. There's really two levels of arousal. When we talk about arousal, we have to look at it in two points. Yeshnan, we have one kind of person. Shalo nichnas la'olam shal avodas Hashem. He has not really entered the world of service Hashem, and this can even be an Orthodox Jew, as we've said. It can be a card-carrying Orthodox Jew who davens three times a day at the 21-minute shachris, okay? But you're not in the world of avodas Hashem. Hu shakua kula ba'olam shel atzmo. He is totally immersed in the world of himself. Be'olamo shel dimyonos, in the world of delusions. He's delusional. And this is reminding us of a little bit of what the Piazetzner Rebbe talked about in Savazerus, where everybody's a little crazy in certain areas. So, and what do we mean delusional? Delusional in terms of priorities. Your priorities are all wrong. You know, you're an Orthodox Jew, who the most important thing to you is how much money you make. And your self-esteem is by, you know, how big your house is, and right after all those physical things in life. And those are your priorities. And of course you send the kid to a Jewish day school because everybody else sends the kid to Jewish day school. But you don't sit down and do homework with the kid, and et cetera, and all those things. And you set priorities, you know, and avodas Hashem, you don't even think about it. What is avodas Hashem? It's getting close to Hashem. You're not in that world at all. Right? You know, it's interesting. This farm right about, the idea of Makas Bechoros, this killing of the firstborn. They talk about it this way. This farm, right, everybody has to ask themselves, what is my Bechor? Meaning to say, not the Bechor, your physical Bechor, but Bechor means first, the firstborn. So, in other words, what's my uppermost thoughts in terms of my priorities in my life? That's a Bechor. It's the firstborn. That's what a firstborn is. What is, you know, a person has a firstborn. That child's your priority in the whole family. That's the priority. The firstborn, that's one that sets the tone. That's the one who's, you know, in the olden days, would the one who would inherit all the family property and would take care of the other kids and this and that. The firstborn carries a certain priority. He gets a double portion for that. There's something to be said about a firstborn. That's the one who made you into a parent. No other kid's going to make you into a parent. That first one transforms you into a parent. There is a certain, although you love all your children, there's no question about it, but that first one, Hezephus, there's something different about that. We can't deny it. And as a shtickle priority. So there's like there's a physical Bechor, there's a conceptual Bechor. So what is, you know, just like from the word Bikurim, this comes from the word Bechor. What is it? First fruits. There's a special love for the first fruits. So the question is, so what are your real priorities in your life? Being honest, what is your priority in your life? Well, my priority in my life is making a lot of money. Having fun. That's my priority in life. What are you living for? You're not saying to get close to Hashem. I'm not talking about people in this room. Right? My priority is to have a lot of kavod, to be popular, to have a lot of friends, to be happy, to feel good about my being a Jew, whatever that means, and to have a pretty wife, and to go golfing. You know, these are my priorities, right? So now what has to happen is there has to be makas b'chayrus. You have to slay that firstborn. So what you have to do is you have to go and say, look, in terms of the firstborn, I got to slay that. I got to kill that. and it's not the Bechor anymore. It's not the Bechor anymore. It's dead. Right? And what had to happen to the Yidden in Mitzrayim is that instead of their actual children getting killed, their existential Bechoris had to be killed. They had to change their attitude. An attitudinal change of everything that Egypt taught me was the most important thing, whatever their mores were, that was most important is, you know, whatever the Egyptians felt were the priorities. All their avodah zarah and everything, you had to slay the firstborn. And they all died that night. And then the Jews were able to go out of Egypt. And Jews, and part of that, you know, put the blood on the doorpost. You know, put your life in danger. You know, that was not a simple thing, to identify yourself as a Jew. That had to become a new priority. It was not such a big priority. And to do those kinds of things, so that all died on that night, and then the Jews were able to move ahead. So the point of all that is a person has to clearly know what is his firstborn. What is your goal in your life? And if the firstborn thought is a healthy thought, then you've killed the Egyptian Bechor. The Egyptian Bechor is not a healthy thought. That, we all have that Egyptian Bechor. And we have to slay that Egyptian Bechor. Then all the subsequent priorities in your life will fall into place properly. Because your firstborn is proper. Right? So that's what we have over here. We have people who don't do that, and they live in the world of dimyonos. They live in the world of delusions. And they're living a delusional life, saying a good Jew does A, B, C, and D, and that's not what a good Jew does. And that's not what we're proud of as being good Jews. I mean, there are delusional Jews who think that going to shul on Shabbos and making a l'chaim during Haftorah is the quintessential heimishkeit of being a good Jew. And they are delusional. And you could talk to them a million times, and they still have to do it. You could sit down with them and explain them the halacha, and tell them how insulting it is to Hashem, and do everything from A to Z. And what do? They'll do it the next week. Are they bad people? Chas v'shalom. I love them dearly. They are delusional. That's what the problem is. They don't get it. They just don't get it. And they think it's a game. There's something cool to, you know, since it's not killing another Jew and it's not stealing. So it's a way I can one-up the rabbi and one-up HaKadosh Baruch Hu and kind of say, you know, it's not, you know, the place where the rabbi tells everything to do, you know, that's not so much fun. You know, it's a little fun to do a little bit that's not so kosher. Forbidden waters are sweet, you know. That's why I don't take it personally. I don't take any of these things personally, you know. But I'm saying it's like, so like it's a delusion. It's like this is Shabbos, and you convince yourself you're doing Kiruv. Keep saying you're doing Kiruv. It's the same five cronies doing it every Shabbos, as if you're doing Kiruv. And we'll be more Kiruv. We'll pull out other guys instead of listening to Mitch do Musaf. Well, you know, and to hear that, to hear the Haftorah. We'll have a few more guys. It'll be bigger. It'll be more Haimish. It's going to be a real Haimish and Haimish, and it's going to be unbelievable. Everyone's going to love this place. We're going to love coming and want our children to learn how beautiful this is. And they're delusional. They're not holding anywhere. Right? So there are people like this. Right? You know, and there are certain shuls where it's not forbidden. It's a mitzvah. You know, and you have three levels of it, and you have to break in to go from the minor league kiddush into the major league kiddush, and all these other things. No, and these are all well-intentioned Jews. I don't think they just don't get the destruction that they're doing. But they are delusional. So now you have such a delusional Jew. So what has to happen to such a delusional Jew? So kidei lahotzi osa misham, to get him out of his delusions. Tzarech lenar osa me'olam bohu nimsa. We got to shake him out of the world that he's in. Something's got to happen. Bibechina, in that level that we say on Kabbalah Shabbos during Lechadori, Hisnari me'afor kumi. Wake me up, stand me up from the dirt. Get me out of the dirt that I'm wallowing in. What does it mean? The deeper meaning is afor. Afor comes, you know, means it's the gross physicality of life, right? That's where man comes from. That the part of the body comes from the earth. Lenaro so me afrurius Hashereslav, to shake him out of the earthliness, the focusing on the physicality, and get him out of his world. So God has to do things to shake you up. God always starts with good things. He gives you blessings beyond what you deserve, and hopefully that will shake you up. You say, wow, I didn't deserve that blessing. I have to thank Hashem for this. You know, Hashem really doesn't want me to go out from shul anymore. I'm going to stop doing, you know, or whatever. Or on the other hand, Chas V'Shalom, after many, many attempts at being kind, then Hashem sometimes, Chas V'Shalom, has to do things that are unkind. But be that as it may, the point is he's doing it to wake you up, to totally blow you out of there. And on the next page, just say one more line. He says, "Benekuda zo." When we're dealing with that point, "Ain tzarech b'yeda kodem." You don't have to have any prior knowledge. There's no carefully planned curriculum over here. Ooh, how are we going to do this? How are we going to? You try any way to wake him up. Till he'll find a way that he's going to want to find a path with Hashem. Right? This is the first type of arousal. In other words, by nature, this is an unstructured arousal. The person needs to be shocked into the reality that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the main thing is not... And the main thing is that it produces a jolt to the system to get him to be thinking about changing his life. And as they say, emergency methods are required. The guy's so into that reality, you know, sometimes he's just got to be pummeled away till he says, you know, I can't see anything else but Hashem is telling me a clear message I have to change. And you have, on rare occasions, people pick up those messages. So that's one kind of arousal. And that will arouse him to start to look at making a binyan. He doesn't have a binyan. So he's going to say, you know, what's life all about, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll say, you know what, I got to start building my Yiddish kedek. Okay, Mr. Shem, tomorrow we'll talk about the second method of arousal.